And it's almost Christmas. Jack, what are you looking forward to most?
Giving gifts, seeing happy faces, and watching Muppet Christmas Carol again without feeling weird because it's not summer.
I like it. Gonna put those cookies out. I'm gonna cover them in sprinkles of Medway and Maidstone Joy. Whatever that means, you can interpret that in very many horrible ways.
Medway and Maidstone are the cultural capitals of the UK for our American listeners.
if there's one reason to escape from London on your European trip, it's these two cities.
Come to Rochester, see the cathedral, see the castle inspired by the hit film Ironclad. And
exactly, and you have four towns or cities in for the experience of one.
I know,
Medway.
It's amazing. You know?
Exactly, it's a bundle package.
It's like that
a
Medway
mystery pitch in itself.
It's like that Medway Christmas thing. In the 80s, which went nowhere.
I mean, until now.
Until now.
Which is why we're incorporating that as our new Christmas soundtrack for the podcast.
Yes.
So, we are doing a Christmas mystery pitch. Last year, we discussed what makes Christmas films so special and how to create the perfect Christmas film.
Okay.
But this time, we're going to be doing... we're going to be adding a creative dimension to
Ooh.
It. So, it's time for our Christmas mystery pitch. Welcome back to Tom Hanks Defence Force. Tom Hanks dressed up as Santa for The Spirit of Christmas. And now, for our feature presentation, Tom Hanks Defence Force, with your hosts, Alex Halpern and Jack Fryer, a podcast for people who love film, television, and Tom Hanks. Welcome back to Tom Hanks Defence Force in this mystery pitch Christmas episode. This is the first time we've done a mystery pitch of this nature.
Yeah, we've done a Christmas mystery pitch, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, we've had mystery pitches about genres and about circumstances and titles and with different mediums, but correct me if I'm wrong, this is the first time we've done a mystery pitch about a festive season.
Yeah, I think we did the horror one, which we recorded it around Halloween.
Sure.
Which, knowing us, we'll probably release around Valentine's Day, so...
Oh, God, this is the potential of our seasons to work within our own time frame.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just do what we want with them,
yeah.
Really. You know, I mean, we'll have Easter in July.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some summer eggs.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you know the rules of mystery pitch, but just in case we have any new listeners who don't, the goal of mystery pitch is to come up with the most exciting, original, hilarious, educational, insightful idea for a film or TV show based on an idea or a concept that the other host has given each other.
Okay.
So we don't have any time to prepare for these in advance. We have no information on what this concept is about. You know, this is the first time we're hearing it. So absolutely zero time to prepare. And we'll see how insane these can get.
Yep, let's do it.
All right, so back for some chaos in the kitchen with Bernstein Bagels and all the other cult classic mystery pitches.
Yeah.
Okay, so Jack, Mystery Pitch Christmas. Would you like to go first?
I've got one already, but do you want to go first?
As in, I give you the pitch?
You can do it first. If you want to give yours first, I've got mine all prepared, raring to go, so how can we do this?
Okay, so I'll give you my pitch,
okay,
and then you pitch the idea to me.
Okay, good.
Okay, so
I'm glad we got that covered, because we'll be here for 20 hours. Like,
English people, I mean. okay, so Jack. So in 1647,
okay,
Oliver Cromwell's Parliament banned Christmas.
Okay.
They banned it to the dark side of the moon and an alternate reality where that law remains. So there's been no Christmas since 1647.
Okay.
And then NASA in 2019 goes to the dark side of the moon and finds out what's happened to Christmas. Jack, what do NASA find when they find Christmas on the dark side of the moon?
Okay. Wow. So, wow, that's never expected. Basic, okay, so it starts, obviously, Christmas is kind of this urban legend about this big thing that happened a long time ago. There's, like, vague writings about it in the past, like Christmas. Some people say it was a time of hell and warfare. Some say it was a time of merriment. Some people say it was a bit of both. Like, you had to fight each other for presents. Obviously, history has kind of distorted what Christmas was, because obviously things get distorted in time. You know, history was written by the winner, and Cromwell banished it. You know, a few resistance movements back in the past saved what bit of Christmas and tried to disperse it. But obviously, this is like a world. So Cromwell was alternative reality. Then he has banned Christmas worldwide. Obviously, he's managed to somehow convince everywhere to ban Christmas.
Sure.
So in 2019, a very annoyed Donald Trump, who has been banned from Twitter, needs to distract himself somehow. He's finally been banned from Twitter. Ivanka and Melania won't let him use their Twitters, so he's got to try and do something. So he's so bored, he discovers. While looking through some archives, a piece of text about Christmas. And he sees a picture of a moon. And obviously, NASA are trying to get to the moon. So he diverts lots of funding, extra funding, from his hair to Christmas and the dark NASA. So, and he tasks NASA, by 2022, I want you to get to the dark side of the moon. So 2020 comes, Trump loses the election. The president who wins is Matt LeBlanc, who, as himself, you know, Matt LeBlanc wins the presidency as a writing candidate, as a protest vote. Matt LeBlanc is written in by president by 100 million disenfranchised Americans and becomes president of the United States.
Where was this in 2016?
I don't know. So he decides, like, I'm going to finish Top Gear, I'm going to finish this season. So he's been the president and Top Gear at the same time. So once Top Gear's out of the race, like, right, I've got a faith with Trump mission somehow. So
I'm sure there's a way to make that happen.
So his vice president, David Schwimmer, comes along.
Yes.
And basically,
this is the government we need. And even here in the UK too.
Yeah, so basically, right, they come along and they get their, they get an intern whose name is Barack Obama, which is just Barack Obama with a big moustache, but no one knows it's him the entire time. They come along and they come up with a plan to get to the dark side of the moon, because they hear on the grapevine that Putin is going to go for the dark side of the moon. He wants to build a massive missile launcher of the dark side of the moon, then twist the moon and point it at America. So obviously their concerns, they go, right, President Blanc goes, right, we're going to get to the dark side of the moon. And so by raising funds for a Friends reunion, they basically managed to, which Matt LeBlanc films after hours, after he's done all his office stuff for the day. So, so basically, they go to the dark side, then they get a team of astronauts. In this, the astronauts are played by, they're played by Aaron Eckhart, Viggo Mortensen, is like an aging like NASA tech who's been wanting to go to the moon. So, like, all right, you can go. All right, okay. So it's Aaron Eckhart, Viggo Mortensen and Robert Pattinson.
We also have Christopher Plummer as Mission Control.
Christopher Plummer as Mission Control, and also Big Bird is on the plane as well. Just Big Bird, just because
no reason.
Yeah, because obviously they want PBS like help us fund the mission. We said, okay, we'll give you some NASA some money, but on the cushion we get Big Bird in space. I'm like, done. So they just, yes, Big Bird on the plane. So obviously it's,
that's how, yeah, you seal the deal.
So Big Bird is on the plane with these three astronauts. They all got there. Tragedy happens. Sean Bean somehow is killed in the plane. Not the plane. The rocket blows off because, like, he's hung over and he wakes up and as it, under the jet, like, oh no, incinerated. So they fly off to the moon. They encounter some turbulence. Then also Richard Branson is trying to race them up there. So it becomes in like some like high Fast and Furious style like race to the, obviously the moon. But then Richard Branson, he gets distracted by a message on his Flappy Bird reunion.
One of the Among Us tweets.
Yeah, and he's like going down. He's playing it, and then the rocket just misses its jump. It's like, oh, whoops. He spends all and he uses up so much energy plugging his phone in to recharge his phone to play Flappy Bird. They have to land. So that's how Richard Branson goes out of the race. So they go about and they find the dark side of the moon and they land on the dark side of the moon. Obviously it's very dark at the moment, so
so no one can see.
So they get all their flashlights and everything, and then they see a snowman on the moon just rocking back and forth slowly, and it's just this snowman and it's gone feral. And so quickly they're using Big Bird comes along with its, like, one of the puppets from Big Bird, like, pulls out a flamethrower from the suit and goes, burns, incinerates it. And then, luckily, they find an elf resistance group, and obviously their leader, Santa Claus, who's played by a very macho, very buff J.K. Simmons. Obviously, he trained off Commissioner Gordon, so he's proper bulked off as like Santa.
Santa!
So J.K. Simmons, of course, you know, J. Jonah Jameson, and the voice of Santa in the new Netflix film, Klaus. So J.K. Simmons is live-action Santa now. And basically, he tells them what Christmas is about. Obviously, he tells them all the actual religious reasons about the birth of Christ, but also he's... Admittedly, he's an emissary sent from the heavens to shepherd Christmas onto the planet, and it turns out Cromwell, using dark magic, banished Christmas to the dark side of the moon, they plan to get Santa. They think Christmas is what the human population needs to not only help save the economy, but also just to make people a nicer people. They think the spirit of Christmas could be a big help. So obviously they get Santa's elves on the plane. The Paplas have to abandon the Big Bird costume though. But then Santa uses his magic to make the Big Bird costume sentient, and so he's just fighting off all the snowman, and he just goes down like a big pile of like snowman. Like, yo, it's like something where just in like World War Z when the zombies just completely smother someone. It's like that. There's snowman just smother.
There's a wave.
Yeah.
When he makes it sentient, does he have the voice of King Charles I, who was also banished to the dark side of the moon by Cromwell?
Potentially, yeah, the spirit of Charles I comes to possess Big Bird. So yeah, they get back and motivate, take Santa back to Earth. And obviously, President LeBlanc announces it. Christmas, okay, so 2023, not this year. It's a bit too busy. It's a bit too short notice. But this year, we're going to get Christmas a go. So 2023 is the first proper Christmas. And obviously, there's a lot of chaos, but people aren't sure what is acceptable amount of presents to get people. And it's like, kind of like people are like, what Secret Santa? I don't understand this concept.
Spending millions on Secret Santa.
And you know, like, what's a Christmas pudding? How do we make it? Then
I bought this random guy. I don't know a work of Ferrari.
And then basically, Santa has to address the nation and just gives all the messages of a bit of Christmas. And it turns out everyone's lovely. And obviously, loads of businesses are struggling. Businesses, they get a sale boost, and it all has a happy ending. And then you see in the future, like a very old President LeBlanc sitting there in a rocking chair for Christmas, and he gets a present.
Oh, and it also banished Black Friday to the dark side of the moon instead.
And he gets it as a book. It turns out to be a photo of him and David Schwimmer and the intern. It's like, wait a minute. That was Barack Obama the whole time. That's how it ends.
Nice, nice. I like it. What's it called?
It's called Festive Friends, I feel.
Festive Friends.
I don't know.
Festive Friends Read Dark of the Moon. Produced by Jerry Bruckheimer.
I don't know. I can't think of an actual title for it. I think like... Christmas versus Cromwell. I don't know.
Cromwell Klaus.
I don't know. I think
Cromwell Claus.
I think Festive Friends is a good idea for it.
Yeah, that's cool. Nice. Interesting. Okay, so my version. Okay, so basically, so 1647, Cromwell's last words to Charles I are, you can either stay and help me bring this country back into order, or you can forge your own royal legion and your own kingdom on the dark side of the moon. Can't be the light side of the moon, because we already promised that to the French king. So there's a bit of it sort of expands beyond the Civil War into more of a complex European conflict. And so Charles I agrees, and he is catapulted over to the dark side of the moon. It's the last trebuchet that hasn't been destroyed in the Civil War, and they put Charles in. They put Charles and a massive hunk of like snow and ice. Like a ton of snow. First of all, they put Charles in the trebuchet, and then they fling him over, and he flies through the stratosphere onto the dark side of the moon. And then a second later, he looks back at Earth once he lands on the moon, and says, "Am I gonna take Christmas with me, or how is this gonna work?" A few seconds later in film time, a giant, like a ton of snow and ice, just flies over, and then he has to step outside. It's like in The Return of the King when Gothmog sees the piece of ruin flying towards him, and he just steps aside before it lands next to him. It's like that. And so the whole story from that is how Charles I rebuilt Christmas.
Okay, on the dark side of the moon.
On the dark side of the moon, yeah, exactly. And then maybe that's the title, How Charles I Rebuilt Christmas.
My mind was like, it's called The Man Who Saved Christmas and The Dark Side of the Moon.
Dark Side of the Moon. So he arrives there. First thing he sees on the dark side of the moon is Roger Waters. just playing his concepts. Pioneering the latest in psychedelic prog rock. So they have a war over who controls the dark side of the moon. It's about that time when Pink Floyd release Another Brick in the Wall. and so Roger Waters says to Charles I, well, I deserve the dark side of the moon because I have also produced this number one hit song and album. It was an album as well, wasn't
it? Yeah, it was Dark Side of the Moon's an album, yeah. Sure, the one on the prism, that famous album cover.
Yeah, for sure. I wasn't sure that was like the actual sort of release.
I'm 90% sure, yeah.
My Pink Floyd knowledge isn't that strong, as you definitely guessed. Dark Side of the Moon, and yeah, so he says, well, I've, released a spectacular album, therefore it is my given right by the music gods to govern the dark side of the moon. So Charles I says, well, if you release another brick in the wall, I'm going to release my own version called Another Snowball in the Wall. So he releases the same thing, the exact same
album. 500-year-old Charles I.
They're trapped in the moon for 500 years. And then he releases his own Dark Side of the Moon. But this all is a Christmas song album. It's a Christmas version of Another Brick in the Wall. So there's a massive battle of the bands on the moon. Charles I versus Pink Floyd. Charles I eventually wins. And so Pink Floyd are banished back to Earth. And then Roger Waters does his whole Roger Waters thing. And that happens. But meanwhile, on the dark side of the moon, Charles I doesn't know what to do with his Christmas album. He's released this, Another Snowball in the Wall. But there's no one to listen to it because Roger Waters and all of his... other moon people have disappeared. They're back on Earth now. So he uses the ton of snow and ice that were catapulted to him by Cromwell and the other forces of the English Civil War to build his own, his armada, his society and civilization of snow people. Basically, that album, every song from Another Snowball in the Wall becomes the national anthem. So they build huge... Because Charles I was actually very autocratic as a ruler. It sort of becomes a bit of a North Korea-style situation. So there are, there are sort of snow or ice carvings of Charles I in every snow person's home. And then there's a natural... sense of class divisions between that, or even race divisions. So you have the Yetis, who are the superior brutish force, and then you have the sort of Olaf style snowmen, who maybe aren't quite as intellectually fine tuned, but they still have soul and personality and character.
So it's like the Orcs and Gretchen, basically.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll go with that. So it sort of becomes more of a dystopian thriller. During that, wow.
There's an Olaf on the table, by the way, we just realised.
We literally had no idea until Jack spotted that.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's in this. And then what happens is that super producer Alex Halpern. Bob Iger basically makes a deal with Charles I and says, you've actually got a really interesting society here. And there's a really interesting story about how the Yeti people are warring with the Olafs. And because we have the copyright and the IP for the Frozen films, why don't we launch an alternate universe series? Where it's a mixture of, it's essentially Olaf's origin stories. So Olaf is one of these snow people that Charles I creates on the moon. He starts becoming more and more insane. And the reason why Olaf sort of becomes a little bit mad, like his character actually is, as lovely as he is that he, he was sort of driven to that extent by the, by listening to Another Snowball in the Wall all day, every day. So Olaf leads an uprising against Charles I's Yetis, and then they essentially build a giant snow trebuchet to catapult them back to... What's the name of the realm in Frozen? Lapland?
No, it's I can't think. It's something like... I can't think. The realm of Frozen. It's not Frozen Land. It's like... It's not Riverdale, is it? No, that's Lord of the Rings.
What, Riverdale or Rivendale?
I don't know.
Riverdale was Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, I can't think.
What? Sorry?
Arendelle,
that's it.
Arendelle, nice, nice. Thank you to our amazing audience of one.
My girlfriend Kathleen, hello. Thank Arendelle.
Arendelle, okay. So they are. So all the snowmen eventually rebel against Charles I and the Yetis, and then they, you know, they're catapulted into Arendelle, and that is the origin of Olaf and the Snow People. Yeah, and so another snowball in the wall is banned in Arendelle. there's only nice Disney songs. Nothing like kind of pseudo alternative content.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so that's the content that
the
Christmas films are waiting to receive.
Fantastic. Loved it. So, I've got my one for you now.
Oh, please. Okay.
Christmas me up. Is a black comedy in a way, so to speak. Dark comedy. But my comedy for you is Joaquin Phoenix and Rooney Mara tried to have a Joker-free Christmas.
Joaquin Phoenix and Rooney Mara.
His girlfriend in real life.
Sure. Yeah. Trying to have a Joker-free Christmas.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. This is a good one. Okay, Joaquin Phoenix. So, okay, it was a calm, wonderful, cheery Christmas Eve. And over in the Hollywood Hills, Joaquin Phoenix and Rooney Mara are getting excited to unwrap their presents under the tree. It is peaceful outside. There is no snow in LA. It's a shiny, star-filled night, and everyone's at peace. You know, LA is very quiet, everyone's looking forward to Christmas, but there are parts of the city that have lots of Christmas cheer. And, you know, they're celebrating the Joker accomplishing over $1 billion at the box office. Amazing achievement. So to celebrate this accomplishment, Joaquin Phoenix decides to buy... So he decides to buy his actual Joker costume.
Okay.
I take that back. Todd Phillips gives the Joker costume that he wore to Joaquin Phoenix as a gift for saying thank you for performing this amazing role. You were an essential part of this progress. Here's a gift. Thank you. Merry Christmas. And it's the night before Christmas, and everyone in the house is asleep. Everyone was stoned, even the mouse. And so Joaquin Phoenix decides to put on the it's Christmas Eve. Rooney Mara goes to bed, and then he thinks, you know what? I'll just practice that. I'll do that dance one more time. I'll improvise it a bit more. And so he puts the costume on, and he starts dancing. And then as he's dancing, he thinks, okay, this is the last time I'll ever put this on, and then the Joker will be, discarded. I won't think about it over Christmas, and I'll just relax until a potential sequel is made.
Okay.
So he's dancing in his living room, and he's dancing to all the rooms, and then suddenly, Jared Leto pops down through the chimney, and then he asks him, Joaquin, where are your cookies and milk? And then, of course, Joaquin Phoenix is like, Jared Leto, how did you get into my house? And so Jared says, well, I thought that, you know, if I ate some of your food, then I would, you know, be able to become your Joker. And maybe Todd Phillips will remake the Suicide Squad in my own vision and, you know, we'll give it a slightly different approach. So Joaquin Phoenix is like, no, what are you talking about? They're just regular cookies and milk. You know, they're there for Santa. And then suddenly Santa's head pops up down the chimney next to Jared Leto and says, Joaquin, if I eat those milk and cookies, will I become the Joker? And Joaquin says, this is just me, you know, being a good actor and understanding the role. So then suddenly, next to him, Bob Iger pops up and says, how can I... Nah, Jess. So then Santa and Jared Leto then turn to each other and say, I don't believe him. You know, it's got to be in that food, that cookies and milk. So he So they both suddenly look at each other. There's a pause. And then they both scramble out of their chimney and they start fighting over the cookies and milk. And so they're wrestling over the glass of milk, and then it flies from their hands. It flies up into the air. Santa stands there with his mouth open wide, and then the milk just flies down, the glass lands in his mouth, and he drinks all the milk. And then Jared Leto is waiting for him. Obviously, he's gutted that he missed the milk, but he's wondering, is he going to turn into the Joker? And all of a sudden, Santa Claus looks at Jared Leto and says, "You know what I really want for Christmas? A society." And then Santa Claus starts essentially redesigning the set of Joker in Joaquin Phoenix's house. And this point, Rooney Mara has woken up and she comes in and she's like, "What's going on?"
She's over a Batman dressing gown and like, "What the heck's happened, guys? Come on.
What is this? What are you doing?" So meanwhile, Santa Claus is completely redesigning Joaquin Phoenix's house. And then Jared Leto, at the same time, scoffs down all these cookies because he realises, hang on, if the milk worked on Santa, then maybe it could work on me. And then, so he's the cookies, and then he looks up at Santa, Rooney, and Joaquin, and then he says, "You know what I really want for Christmas? I really want to know how I got these scars." And so he starts basically, and so he runs over to one of the walls, tears off all the pictures, and then he starts writing the origin story of how the Joker got the scars, how Christopher Nolan's Heath Ledger Joker got the scars. And so he keeps on writing loads of, he doesn't just write one story, He writes loads of stories, and eventually he starts writing all over Joaquin Phoenix's house, and all across the kitchen table, and on every single Christmas bauble on the Christmas tree, everywhere. By that point, so he's writing everywhere, and then he starts writing onto the sets that Santa Claus is redesigning. So Santa Claus looks up at him and says, "Hey, you can't write your stories in here. This is the society room." And so Jared Leto says, "Don't worry, I'm not going to write. I'm just going to write it really, really bad." And then he keeps on writing all over the set. And then Todd Phillips thinks, Joaquin Phoenix calls Todd Phillips and says, "Look, you've got to help me out. Santa Claus is building the Joker set in my living room. Jared Leto is trying to rewrite the Joker origin story all over my house." And so Todd Phillips thinks, "Oh God, what have I done?" And so a few moments passes, and Joaquin and Rooney are trying to stop this, their house being, turned into this, Joker-fied. That's a good way of putting it. And then all of a sudden there's this rumbling noise and everybody stops. And then they all look up towards the door where the noise is coming from. And then Todd Phillips drives through the door in a massive bulldozer. Not a bulldozer, Santa's sleigh.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he drives through in Santa's sleigh. And Todd Phillips says, "You know what Joaquin Phoenix wants for Christmas? Civility. Kindness and civility and an end to austerity." And so Jared Leto both look up and say, "Actually, no, you're right. Maybe that is what the Joker film is all about. Maybe that's the importance of it." But they both ask, "We've eaten Joaquin's milk and cookies. How are we going to get out of this Joker mindset?"
Vegan milk and cookies, of course, because Wacky Phoenix and Rooney Mara are vegan, so yeah.
Exactly, yeah, vegan milk and cookies. It is oat milk, and the cookies are made with...
soya.
Corn. Corn cookies. Yes. That's what they're made with. So Todd Phillips says, "Don't worry, come with me, I'll take you there." So they basically drive to Los Angeles. Santa sleigh slash bulldozer. And basically everyone who doesn't believe in the spirit of Christmas, they just bulldoze through their house and say, "Don't worry, we'll help you, we'll show kindness and generosity by rebuilding your homes with whatever Todd Phillips originally bought for all these kids around the world." Because then it's revealed to be Todd Phillips is the actual Santa.
Ooh.
And then the Santa who wants to become the Joker tears off a face mask. And then there's like an alien hugger underneath it, so he tears that off as well. Who could it be? It's Christopher Plummer again. Nah, Jess, it's No, it's Guillermo del Toro. So yeah, they're both there, and then Guillermo del Toro and Jared Leto are helping Todd Phillips rebuild every Hollywood awful person's house.
Yeah.
And anyone who doesn't appreciate the spirit of Christmas, rather, and helping to teach them the spirit of Christmas. And then so Joaquin and Rooney Mara, they realise their house has been completely jokeified. But they think, you know what, you know, sure what, we didn't, you know, we managed to not have a Joker-free Christmas, but we still have each other.
Aww.
And our veganism, and we're going to celebrate what we have and appreciate the joy of
Aww.
Each other. It's about each other, which makes the spirit of Christmas,
Aww.
Not the material things in our house, which are now very Joker-fied. And they're happy, and LA is happy, and Todd Phillips is still making interesting, great films. And that's the end of my story.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, a very a not-so-Joker-free Christmas.
Okay, yeah.
Hit me with yours.
Okay, so my one's obviously a lot different. my one basically is... So Wacky, it starts off at the end of November. Obviously, the Joker's still playing in cinemas everywhere because it's a phenomenal film. It's made over $1 billion, and it's still rising. And Joaquin Phoenix one day, he's walking down the street, and every flight of stairs he sees someone's doing the Joker dance, like down the stairs. Like there's somebody doing every flight of stairs, dressed as the Joker, dancing down the stairs. And every time he goes into like a bathroom in like a bar, there's someone doing the dance in the toilet. And he's thinking, oh God, this is insane.
Oh God.
And there, obviously, some of them are in face, but some are not. And he meets a man who, who's played by Steve Carell. And in this one, he legally changes his name to Arthur Fleck. And he starts following Joaquin Phoenix around. Obviously, Joaquin Phoenix at first is he's a bit cheeky and gets him to do like his laundry, his washing up, the hoovering, wrapping all his Christmas presents, you know, getting him to go to Extinction Rebellion protest for him, and getting doing all that vegan stuff. Basically,
sure.
And then Arthur Fleck, well, Steve Carell's Fleck, basically starts like getting really intimate and tries to get really intimate with Joaquin Phoenix, and Joaquin Phoenix is like, don't do, please. Like, I appreciate what you've done for me, but leave me alone. And obviously, it gets a bit, but obviously, he and Rooney Mara in bed one day, and they turn over, and he's just there next to them, like, hello, Joker make-off. Like, all right, get out. So they kick him out. Obviously, then more and more people find out where Joaquin Phoenix lives and start standing outside his house versus the Joker, and they're just standing there. And obviously, it's like the birds. So obviously, Joaquin Phoenix, he needs to go to work one day, another project. It turns out Joaquin Phoenix is, he's playing Steven Gerrard in a film about his life. So and he's fully methoding. Like, so he's got doing the Scouse accent all the time he's doing on set. So so that's what's happening. And every time, even on set though, there's like just people standing there just like, it's like the birds of Hitchcock, so the birds are just jokers. So there's people just standing there just waving or just dancing and
up on the telephone lines.
Yeah. And obviously because he's Joaquin Phoenix, he can just ignore all of this. He can put it out of his mind.
Does he go into a phone booth and try to make a call, and all the Jokers suddenly just start like flapping around the phone booth?
No. But basically, right, he's just there, and but obviously because he's Joaquin Phoenix and a phenomenal actor, he can just forget about it, and he can fun them all out and just play Steven Gerrard. So he's doing his thing. Obviously, he filmed a scene where he wins the Champions League final, and he decides to go home. He decides to show up, you know what? Then the Joker's all disappeared. And like, oh, I'm going to walk home. I'm going to be carbon free. I'm going to walk home. I'm not going to get an Uber. I'm not going to get Addison Lee. I'm not going to get a taxi or anything. I'm not going to hitchhike. I'm going to walk. So he just starts walking home. And then he starts a crowd of Jokers to start following him. And he's like, oh no. So then they start running, and he starts running, and then they start running, and then suddenly a car pulls up. He couples up, and a gun comes out of the car and just mows down the Jokers. Then Jack Nicholson comes out and goes, get it, come with me if you want to live. So he pulls in the car, and Jack Nicholson just drives him off, drives him home, and he's like, the Jokers are after me as well. The Jokers just is infected society. You know, he's okay. And he goes, then Jack Nicholson says, we live in a society where everyone's become obsessed with the Joker. And so,
interesting.
Yeah.
Nice.
And he tells Whacking to watch himself. And he says, if you need me, just just think about me and I'll be there. And turns out they've both got The Shining, so maybe they can think about each other. I misheard it's called The Shining. But yeah. Shining. So Wacky Fierce goes home, he tells Rooney Mara about the day she's had, and Rooney Mara's like, yeah, I've been followed by a few jokers as well, but I beat them up with my martial arts skills. So it's like, okay, because turns out Rooney Mara's actually a ninja, so yeah. And so yeah.
She cyber hacks into their minds.
Yeah.
Also using The Shining.
And so and Wacky Phoenix is like, right, I just want a joker-free Christmas, right? I want to eat my tofurkey and have the vegetables and just relax, watch It's a Wonderful Life, and just celebrate the success that I've had this year and just turn off. And they try to have a joke-free Christmas, but everywhere it goes, there's just, you can see there's like a Santa as a joker, there's like Joker Christmas decorations, and everything's just very overwhelming.
Mm.
And then, so he decides to, like, one day he realizes he's being followed by Steve Carell again, and he's like, he decides to hide out in a shopping center, but then Joaquin Phoenix's Joker follows, Steve Carell's Joker follows him. And then he thinks he's cornered, but it turns out there's another pathway, an outcome pathway. It's like that scene in Terminator 2 where you first see the T-1000, T-100 first meet. It's Mark Hamill in the full sunglasses, leather jacket, with a big shotgun. He tells Joaquin Phoenix to get down, shotgun Steve Carell away, because Steve Carell starts about to pull out a knife. Then Mark Hamill says, you know, come with me if you want to live. And it's like, what? So, okay. So he gets in and he turns out, and Mark Hamill takes him on the back of the motorbike, drives him off. Basically, the whole Terminator 2 scene, where the motorbike and the lorry.
Yeah.
But it turns out, obviously there's like another Joker driving it, but they defeat him. Like, it's exactly a shot-for-shot scene, that Terminator 2. But instead of like that Joker turning into liquid, just dies. So Mark Hamill tells him, like, the Jokers, all the Joker actors and voice actors are being slowly killed off.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, Jared Leto has been iced already, a few of their voice actors have been killed, and he takes them to a hideout where Jack Nicholson is and a few other people, like Troy Baker, who voiced with the Arkham games, is there as well, and yeah, Kevin Michael Richardson's then, and it turns out, yeah, but a lot of people who have been the Joker or have voiced the Joker or even done stunts for the Joker, they've all been popped off. And it turns out that Christopher Plummer, who's like a super Batman fan, he's trying to find which is the best Joker by seeing who can survive the longest, because obviously the Joker in the comics has a miraculous knack for survival. After being pummeled by Batman so many times, he keeps coming back for more, and he wants to find out who is the best Joker. So it turns out Hamill, Phoenix, Nicholson, all, for three of them, they decide we're going to go and face Christopher Plummer, we're going to go take him down. So they get into like a sports car, like a Ferrari, and they drive through. Obviously, word, and turns out though, there's like a riot going on, just like in a protest about something. An Extinction Rebellion have got violent, and they're all dressed as the Joker as well. So it's all this Joker's like in the street, like just smashing stuff up, like burning things, saying "Save the planet," or like blowing up a building, causing like smoke to go up in the air, and just going mad.
That's the landscape.
And they just, yeah, and yeah. It turns out there's been somebody, Jack, Christopher Plummer, though, it turns out he's like put some Joker venom in the water, it's made everyone go crazy. And Joaquin Phoenix realizes he can save this. He says, he stops, so he gets on a podium and he says, "We live in a society where everyone is obsessed with the Joker, but this is a society where everyone should be obsessed with Christmas. It's Christmas, for goodness sake. Live for each other, look after each other." And everyone kind of, it kind of breaks a spell, and everyone starts rebuilding the city together, hugging, apologising.
Using The Shining.
And then they go, right, we're going to stop Plummer. So they find Plummer, and he's in a house, and they find him dead. He's like, what? What happened? And it turns out there's a batarang, like, stabbed into Christopher Plummer's chest.
Oh, no.
And then they don't know who's killed him. And then Jack Nicholson says, oh, look, I'm retired, I'm going to get to the bottom of this. And it's like, Joey and Salman's like, leave Sauron to me. He's like, leave Batman to me. So, yeah.
Amazing.
And,
yeah.
And then Hamill and Wacky Fit, they part ways. And it ends on Christmas Eve. Wacky Fit tries to have a nice Christmas. He has a Joker-free day. He doesn't check social media or anything. He really might have a lovely day. Then Christmas Day, he gets a letter, and it's a Joker Christmas card. It opens and it says to Joaquin, "Merry Christmas, love, Todd Phillips." And he goes, "Todd!" And that's when the film ends.
And that's it.
That's it.
Nice, I like it.
Yeah.
What's it called again?
Called Joker All the Way.
Joker All the Way. I love it.
It's a wonderful laugh. There you go.
Nice. Interesting. I mean, definitely.
A Joaquin Phoenix Christmas Carol. Something all the terrible Christmas puns now.
Every Christmas film ever.
Yeah. Christmas, eh?
Well, yeah, I mean, you could just take any Christmas film and just warp that title very slightly.
Of course.
Which is really the satire that, you know, plays into the Joker's message in almost every Batman film.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of this play on, you know, what society is supposed to be and what it's not supposed to be.
Yeah, of course.
That's really interesting.
Thank you. I'm glad it turned into a good one. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's... if you have any Christmas films that you'd like to share with us, any pitches or general ideas, then please tweet us at Tom Hanks Defense. We are there and we do read and listen. If you want to send us any audio messages somehow, then...
Send them to us.
Absolutely. Or write on our Facebook.
Yeah.
Jack, any further final thoughts about Christmas stories?
Christmas is a good time of year. Obviously, we've got all these Christmas films. We're going to be bombarded by Christmas films and people and Christmas series and specials. And people might feel pressured to kind of watch them all because, obviously, I'm someone who feels like they've got to kind of take advantage of Christmas things where it's Christmas, but at the end of the day, it's family is the most important thing at Christmas. So
family is the most important thing at Christmas. Friends and family, and make sure you tell stories to each other.
Yeah, tell stories.
Make sure you
listen
to each other and learn from each other this Christmas.
Reach out to those in need as well. Just like you got a friend who's feeling a bit low over the season, invite him over for a coffee.
Exactly. You know, don't look down on anyone. That is, you know, the message that I think we all got out of Todd Phillips's Joker.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously why it's such an important film for our time. So this Christmas, look out for each other, tell stories to each other, entertain each other, just show more love to each other.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, and we'll try harder to be better people to each other. So thank you for listening. We'll look forward to carrying on the conversation on Twitter and Facebook.
And Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Boom, 2020.
Here we come.
Oh, that's going to be an interesting year.
It's going to be a fun year, but we'll see what happens and who wins any election that's coming forward. There'll be a lot of elections.
We'll take it as it comes and survive. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Tom Hanks Defense Force. Find us and join the conversation on Twitter and Facebook.